everybody, and welcome to another episode of Tales from a Vet Tech with me, Tabitha Kucera. Today, I have two amazing, trailblazing veterinary technicians, Liz Houston and Tasha McNerney, to talk all about National Veterinary Technician Week, which is October 16th through the 22nd. And I know in Canada and other countries, they celebrate veterinary technicians in the whole month of October. So props for them. And of course, here at Tales from a Vet Tech, we celebrate veterinary technicians every single day. But I'm speaking to Tasha and Liz all about what they love about being veterinary technicians, advice that they would want to share with their colleagues, and more. So happy Veterinary Technician Week to all of you amazing veterinary technicians out there. Hi, everybody. Welcome, Tasha McNerney and Liz Houston, the amazing badass technicians who inspire me every fucking day of my life. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much for having us.
We were chatting before the podcast, but you guys won't get to hear that fun chat. But I'm super stoked to have you guys on. It is Veterinary Technician Week. We celebrate veterinary technicians. Woo-woo! Every day. So of course I had to bring on two of my favorite, although I love all of you out there, just to chat about being a veterinary technician, what we love about being a veterinary technician. And then on the other side, some of the challenges that we are still experiencing, as veterinary technicians. So to get started, I'll just start with Tasha and then we can go to Liz. What do you love about your career as a veterinary technician?
Oh man, I do love a lot of things. And I think that probably for me, I do love a lot of things. I really do. I know that sometimes I can come across on Facebook, like there's so many problems, and there are, we'll get to that. But I really do love not only the patients and the cases where I've personally made a difference, but I love educating the next generation of veterinary technicians. I love seeing when people like get it. Like, I love working with students, especially, you know, I specialize in anesthesia. So I love when they finally, you know, you can see those light bulbs go on where they understand like, oh, wow, if I give this drug, it does this, and I can see it play out in real time. And I think part of my job that I really love is that I'm just deep down like an anatomy and physiology nerd. Like, I love physiology so much. And for me, anesthesia is the area of medicine where I can literally watch drug physiology play out in real time in front of me. So I get to geek out all the time. So that's cool.
Wow. I never thought of anesthesia that way. Oh my gosh. You might make me start loving anesthesia. I don't think so.
She has helped me love anesthesia. That means you're a good teacher. And it's super fun because I was talking to Tasha and Liz. We're all veterinary technicians who are doing a lot of things and in very different areas. So I think we all agree on a lot of things, but I love the idea of us all just sharing kind of our own experiences. So yeah. What do you love about being a veterinary technician?
You know, that is actually something I really love. I look at the different academies, for example. There are 16 specialty academies, and it's crazy. I don't know anything about ophthalmology, but they're like people who specialize in eyes. That's all they do. And yet we're both veterinary technicians. That is just so cool to me, that the breadth of knowledge that exists in our profession. And I just think it's amazing to watch people follow their passion. What I've been spending a lot of my time doing now, talk about light bulb moments, right, is cluing people into their power, their voice. How do they advocate for themselves and their team? You know, teaching them how to speak up for themselves. And that is something, when you see it happen, when you see people really take charge of their career, of their workplace in a way that they haven't before, it's tremendous. And, you know, I mean, I got into vet med in the first place because I am also a total anatomy and physiology nerd junkie. I love it. I love pharmacology. You know, I love all of that stuff. I take it in a different way, right? I like really like trauma. And I'm not a pain management. I'm not a certified pain professional, but I love pain management. I love making sure that my patients are comfortable. I was so excited when Fear Free came around because I've also always loved behavior. I'm one of those techs that is like, if I could specialize in all 16 academies, I would do that because like, I just love it all. There are pieces of everything that I really love about this career. For all of the downside, there are so many things that I love about being a veterinary.
And I think everyone can relate to this, but we all have a love-hate relationship with at least I know a lot of my colleagues can, because I think like Tasha was saying, she is not negative at all, but how she felt like that. The reason I feel like we care so much because we love being veterinary technicians so much that when we see us not getting represented or not being recognized appropriately or even being acknowledged at the table in vet med, it's really, really frustrating because we care so much. And as far as me, it's so funny because I don't love pharmacology. So I do. I like it. I like it because behavior meds is a whole nother cup of tea that, and it's just funny because we're all in different, and I love emotional. I don't want to say I love emotional trauma, but I love breaking it down and helping animals feel better about it and giving caregivers tools on how to better understand their animals. And those light bulb moments, like Tasha said, when you see the veterinary, like when I'll do a lecture and they ask me a question about something that they're basically saying, so this would not be the appropriate thing to do in that. And I'm like, oh my God, you're amazing. And you thought of this on your own. You are critically thinking when it comes to handling, which is all I ask.
That's so, it.
Yeah. That's that, like, we love our careers so much, but I think that's also why sometimes some of the things that we see happening to veterinary technicians are so disheartening to us because
it hurts.
Yeah. Legit. Like, we care so much and we, like you said, all three of us advocate for other veterinary professionals. We want to uplift and highlight and support because we've all been in places, especially my first few years with minimal to no support.
All of us.
And how I've been able to flourish. Like, I'm very successful, but a big part of that is because my supportive family and my amazing friends and colleagues like you two, who really, if I'm feeling down, you're like, yeah, it's normal to feel shitty sometimes or because it is burnout and things. It's okay to not be okay sometimes. None of us are like weird robots, guys. But also, if I'm feeling like I'm unsure, so I don't feel like that ever anymore, because I'm like, hey, if something's not happening, like this doesn't exist, let's try it. And then it always works out. And I think so many of us are just creating our own opportunities. I've won a lot of stuff because I was like, no one's doing this. I really like it. I'm going to get more skills in it. And then I was like, whoa, why didn't I do this before? So I think so many of us as technicians are creating our own opportunities. And although it could be discouraging sometimes, guys, the opportunities for us they're just endless, as you can see, because me, Tasha, and Liz are very successful and do very different things.
I mean, I think for me, Tasha's really the model of that. You know, she and Darcy and Louise and Steven started Veterinary Anesthesia Nerds, and it's just become a force in the profession. And that, I think, is so amazing. I mean, here we are. We could just compliment each other all day. But seriously, it's true. Like, what you have done, you know, the community that you've built there is really, it is truly creating change. It's leading to better outcomes. It's making people think more about what they do when they're in that surgery suite. And I think that is all we can ask for, I think, is having that kind of an impact in our area, right? So in behavior, making sure that pets are having good experiences. And if they're not, how can we help turn their brains around? How can we make anesthesia safer for pets, for also for us. Mm-hmm. How can we have better outcomes? How can we ensure that pets are physically comfortable? And then how do we help make our profession sustainable for people to do this for the long haul? It is my dream that we have people in this profession, like nursing, right? Yeah. Where somebody does it for 20, 25, 30 years, that their body doesn't break down because they're not asked to do things that hurt their body, right? That we protect people's safety, that we don't expose them to hazards, that they have the help that they need, that they have the tools that they need. And then that their voice is heard so that they can advocate for themselves and really make this a sustainable lifelong career. That, you know, that's my big hairy goal.
Goals, goals, goals. And on that beautiful, that's all we live, guys. That's we're go-getters. I'm sure many of you are similar to us. It is healthy and also unhealthy. Yay. What on that beautiful segue, what is one piece of advice? And I know that's very difficult, and we're probably going to drop lots of wisdom throughout the episode, but what is one piece of advice that you would share with your veterinary colleagues? And I'll have you start, Tasha.
Oh, yeah, there's so many, but I try to personally live like I have like two quotes that I live by. One is, don't believe everything you think.
Love it.
And the second is, it's a quote from a Depeche Mode song. So for people who are very young, they don't know who that is, but that was a band a long time ago.
Everything counts in
but this quote was, don't just stand there and shout it, do something about it. And that was the quote I used in my high school yearbook. And I legit have tried to live my professional life, just all of my life by that, that if I see that there's something that we could be doing better, let's investigate it. Let's talk about it. Let's see, how could we be doing this better? I mean, you know, that's what I've tried to create with Anesthesia Nerds. And that's not to say I've done it. I mean, Anesthesia Nerds wouldn't be as amazing as it is without people like Steven, like Darcy. God, Darcy, who just always answers every question so eloquently in the chat. Steven, who forces us to challenge the ways that we've always done it this way, to think about things that are new and different and might even be controversial. So I think, if you as veterinary technicians listening to this and thinking about your career and your career longevity, if you use those two things, A, don't believe everything you think. So that means just because you have only been trained in this one veterinary hospital, in this one way of doing things, don't believe that is the only way of doing things, right? And that's kind of why I love anesthesia. Anesthesia is not black and white. Anesthesia is like so many different shades of gray, right? Liz might like fentanyl, but Tabitha, you might like oxymorphone and I might like methadone. They're all opioids. So whatever you like, that's fine. And again, as you see things that may need to be changed and adjusted, speak up about them, whether that be the quality of medicine, whether that be what's going on in your team or just your career itself. I mean, Liz, one of the amazing things about Liz and what she has put out on Facebook is really, hopefully everybody knows by now, that y'all need to be discussing your salary. It's perfectly legal for you to be discussing your salary, and don't let any employee handbook tell you that it is illegal for you to discuss your salary.
Yeah. I mean, that is really my best piece of advice, I think, is know your rights in the workplace and recognize your power and your voice. We, as credentialed veterinary technicians, we are co-equal members of the veterinary care team. The doctor isn't over us. We are co-equal partners. We are the eyes, hands, ears, and nose of that doctor when it comes to patient care. They are the mouthpiece that goes out and talks to the client, right? That is the relationship. We are not, one is not better than and less than the other. So we need to recognize that, truly internalize and believe that. Because what I see, I think, is so much shame. It's shame tied with imposter syndrome, tied with just feeling less than. And I wish I could tell I want everyone listening to this to just realize that you are not less than anyone or anything. You are enough. You are amazing. You are needed in the role that you are filling. And you need to recognize that you are the one providing the care, the service, right? That honestly, that clients are paying for, that companies are making a ton of money on. We are the ones doing it. And we need to recognize that we have that power. And that we have rights that come with that power, in addition to like all of our legal rights that we have as workers in the United States. But
which you should check those out, because I didn't know about a bunch of them. I'm just going to be honest with you guys.
Yeah.
Things that like you don't really think about. And now that I'm older, because again, with experience and meeting other people and learning from friends and colleagues, which is why mentorship and supporting each other is so important, because that's one of the biggest pieces of like everything that you guys are saying. But also, I always tell technicians who are struggling physically, mentally, emotionally with feeling stuck. I've been that technician, and I'm very confident. And I've been that technician. I'm going through an imposter syndrome bout right now, and that's okay. So there are other opportunities, and you are not stuck. And even if your employer, because unfortunately it has happened to me in my own experience, makes you feel like you're lucky to have don't get me started. You're lucky to have this position. And I meet so many technicians, and I understand it, because part of it's learned helplessness, because we try and we try to make changes, and we're professional, and it nothing changes. So I understand it. But also, I know so many people who are like, there's no point in going to another place because it's going to be the same or worse. And that hurts. Like, it makes me want to cry. And obviously, I'm not putting this responsibility on everybody, because I know we're all in different places and not everyone can leave their job immediately and things like that. But also understand that, like Liz said, you are enough. You are incredible, and you are not stuck. There are so many, like for me, I made my own opportunities.
That's right.
Because I wasn't seeing what I wanted, the kind of discussions or care that I wanted to see. So maybe I couldn't find a good fit, or for me, what starting my own business was probably the best for me. But again, these are things that you guys could do in your practices. You can have, if you're really into behavior, start puppy and kitten socialization classes. Or if you're really into nutrition, be the nutrition, because nutrition is really important and clients have lots of questions about it.
They do.
Create a program about it, and you should make more money, and you should be that nutrition tech. And that's going to save time from the veterinarians to talk to the clients. And not everyone loves nutrition, guys. It's not. Empower that technician to do those conversations you don't want to do anyway.
Right. That's it. I think, you know, I mean, when I was on the Anesthesia Nerds podcast, Tasha and I talked a little bit about how do you, and even I think you're maybe not your last episode, but the episode with Teresa Cosper Roberts, you talked about how do you convince your team, you know, how do you let them know what you're trained to do, what you're capable of doing? How do you convince them to allow you to do more things, new things? And we know that veterinarians are risk averse speaking generally, and that they feel they get inculcated from the time they're in school that it's all on them. It's their license on the line. Don't do this because it's your license on the line. And they take that really very, very seriously. And I'm not saying they shouldn't, but, I remind them that I also have a license on the line that I need to protect, that I am actually trained, educated, and skilled in what it is that I want to do. It has been verified by other people through my education, right? AVMA has a whole list of skills that I have to master before I can even graduate from a vet tech program, not to mention putting the VTS aside, right? Which is a whole separate issue. So I have these skills. I can do these things. I have been trained to do these things. Let me take some of that burden from you and do those things. And I think finding your passion, that's a way for you to really focus in on that, to say, hey, I've been doing a ton of studying about anesthesia, and I went to this conference in Vegas. It was all about anesthesia, and we learned about CRIs. And I think it would be really great to try CRIs in some of our patients. Like, maybe if we're doing, you know, a full chain mastectomy, which they do in general practice, which is like insane, like maybe rather than just pre-medding that patient with a single dose of morphine and then going, taking them to surgery and thinking, oh, they're under anesthesia, they're not feeling pain, quote unquote, right. You know, maybe, and then they wake up screaming and they go home and they're screaming, yeah, and they, you know, maybe this might work. Why don't we try it? You know, what do you need, DVM, to feel more comfortable with me doing this? Like, let's pick the best, the optimal patient for this. Let's pick the something that's very low risk. We will try something again that's also, you know, reversible or easily stopped or whatever if we get into trouble. And every success you have will build on the previous success. So, you know, we had a patient, my first job in a GP, it had maybe some loss of bladder tone or something. And it was coming in every couple of days to have its bladder drained. And the vet was doing the catheterization. And I was like, it was a male dog. I was like, I can do this. Like, I'm trained to do this. I can do this. They're like, oh, I don't know. Nervous. Okay. Like, why don't you let me try once? You can be right here, direct, immediate supervision, be right here, watch everything. And if you are uncomfortable at any point in the procedure, what I'm doing, take over. Fine. No problem. Yeah. I won't push it again. They saw me do it. They were like, oh, okay. You know, then the next time they were like in the treatment room, but not right at my shoulder. Right. And then the next time they were just in their office, because they had recognized, oh yeah, you can do this. And then guess what? The next time some animal came in and needed a catheter, or they couldn't get urine, right? Or they didn't want to poke for a cysta or whatever, they could say, oh, Liz, she can pass the catheter, the sample, whatever.
No, I love that.
I think is how you, I don't know. That's my idea of how you kind of build that in.
I love that. I love that approach. So I know this is a heavy question, but I'll start with Tasha. Where would you like to see the field, basically, where would you like to see veterinary technicians in the field in the future? Kind of where would you like to see our career going?
Oh, man.
Because we're always improving, everybody. So this
That's
is
right. There's so many possibilities. Listen, I'll say it this way. There are a lot of possibilities for growth.
Love it.
A lot of opportunities for growth and change.
To be fair, I say that a lot of times. Listen, I go into some practices. I do practice consulting, and I'll go into a practice if they, you know, need some. And I never say like, oh boy, what you're doing is really like, you got to work on this. This is messed up. I always say, there's a lot of opportunities for growth here. Right? That's all there is.
So that's so diplomatic.
I love it.
Yeah. So I think as in veterinary technology, we have a lot of opportunities for growth. And one of those, I think, and this is my personal opinion, I think we need a unified title. Okay. We need it. Like, let's all just say we're going to be RVTs, and let's just put it. Can somebody just put it on a piece of paper and we'll all pass around and it'll get 1,000 signatures. Like, right. Can we just do this? Like an online petition. Like they got the Johnson & Johnson's tape back through a signature thing. Let's That's just right. say we're going to be RVTs now. We're all going to be RVTs all over. Let's get it changed over. So that everybody knows, and then we can start educating the public. We can start educating everybody what that means. What does an RVT do? What are the, you know, job descriptions? What are the duties involved? Letting the public know. I mean, guys, I just had a friend who's a pretty well-known on Instagram person, and his dog had a surgery. We were talking about it, and he basically expressed to me he had no idea that an uncertified person would be allowed to do anesthesia or perform anesthesia.
And that is a very common, people do not know that.
It's kind of like a weird gray area.
Yeah.
You know? And that's not to say please, this is not a conversation of me trying to pit a certified or a registered tech versus an on the job. I have worked with some fan fucking tastic on the job trained technicians who have amazing technical skills.
Okay. Same.
But I think if we're going to take our profession to that next level,
definitely,
and be taken seriously, we all got to have the same level of education, certification, say we pass the same test. We all have these letters after our name. Here's what it means, so that the general public and people in the veterinary industry, when they're hiring us, et cetera, they know what they're getting.
Yep.
And we have that standard of care.
Yeah, I agree. 150%. 180%, 104,000%. Yes.
Yeah, that's not math.
No, I think we would like to see that for the field, because obviously there's a lot of other things that all three of us, I'm sure, would like to see, but we need to start at a place, right, where the basics, what is a veterinary technician? And this is the skills and criteria of what a veterinary technician is. It's clear for everybody, including veterinarians.
That's right.
And then we can start to educate the general public, because right now it's a little difficult because, like you said, there's so much gray area, and even veterinary professionals themselves would like more clear criteria, because some of them are like, I'm not sure if I should, because, and I understand that. And that's a hard thing, guys, that in our own fields, us as professionals are like, should I, because I don't know if that will be beneficial for me. And it's not because they don't have great technical skills and they don't want to do better by their patients. It's because they see that the veterinary industry doesn't really even have an understanding of what a veterinary technician is. So they're like, should I go to school? So I understand, it's really affecting. I mean, it's even affecting people who, it's kind of mind boggling for people in this field who are trying to consider this as a career. And some people, they're just like, so this isn't a career because it's not taken seriously. Again, I can understand it from all of these.
Well, right. And how do you consider it a career when the people's average lifespan in the job is 5 to 7 years? That's not a career.
Yeah.
That's a job. Like, that's not a career.
For sure.
Like, we need to make it a career. And I think we do that when we commit to it, when we take it seriously, when we take ourselves seriously, when we respect ourselves and we respect the job enough to really invest the time and effort, energy, money into getting and maintaining that credential. And I think that is the first step. I mean, maybe there are kind of concurrent steps, I think, because what I hear from a lot of really, again, super talented assistants, super skilled, very knowledgeable, they've been doing it for many, many years. And they say, well, why would I go to school? I can do the same thing. I can do everything that a credential tech can do. So that's the first issue, right? We need to make it, we need to give people a reason beyond self-motivation, interior motivation, right? We need to apply exterior motivation. Like, you are not allowed in Virginia, for example, you can't place an IV catheter if you are not a credentialed technician. For me, that seems a little extreme, but also, like, that's the rule. That's the law. So, like, and that gives someone a clear motivation to want, like, hey, I want to place IV catheters. I want to do anesthesia. I want to intubate. Whatever the rules are in your state. But that's one problem, right? Is we don't have a standard set of rules across all the states about who can do what and who can't do what. So that's an issue as well. Unified title, super important. I personally think a defined scope of practice that is the same across all the states is maybe more important.
Super random
title.
But I have a therapist, a PhD in mental health professional, like very close friend. She does Mental Health Matters episodes here. And we were talking about behavior consulting and veterinary technician and doing some stuff together because we think there could be a lot of helpful things. And I've had a very difficult client recently, emotionally, just lots of things. And she's like, so what's your scope of practice? And I was like, you're so funny. And then she's like, And she's like, so you don't have, and then she, cause it's very interesting to both of us. And I was like, yeah. So you can imagine from a veterinary technician and a behavior consultant standpoint, how difficult my job is because I don't, none of these things are built in. And
that's right.
And it just, I was approaching it from like a mental health standpoint, like these very difficult emotional situations that I'm put into as a veterinary professional and as a behavior consultant, and how none of those things are just routine. And that probably also affects our compassion fatigue and burnout. Again, it's super, completely. It was super random, but I was like, we were just talking about that.
Yeah.
Over coffee 2 days ago. So
I think the title and the defined scope of practice really go hand in hand, for sure. So I think I'll just take the next step, which is what I would like, where I would like to see veterinary technology. And I agree wholeheartedly with Tasha. There is so much opportunity here. It is fertile ground.
Love it.
For, for growth. In my ideal world, what I see is a profession where we have credentialed technicians leading patient care in facilities. So they are the people who are helping develop protocols and standards for the way conditions are treated, right? So you have, let's say, you are a general practice. And so most of your bread and butter stuff, you don't really hospitalize stuff. It's surgery and, you know, appointments. Okay, great. So I can say, okay, for well appointments, just healthy pet annual exams, here's the protocol. Here's the things that we recommend. Here's how we recommend them. Here's the doctor's part of the job. Here is the technician's part of the job. Here's what the assistant does. And these are how these appointments get run, right? Then we add on a whole separate schedule for just for credentialed technician appointments, where they are doing, they're implementing treatment plans that have already been prescribed by the doctor. So they're administering IV fluids, they're teaching people how to give insulin injections, they're doing bandage changes, they're collecting diagnostic samples for the doctor to review, perhaps obtaining diagnostic images, whatever that might be. And that's all run completely separate, independent, autonomously from whatever the doctors are doing, right? So the doctors are going to have appointments. They may or may not have technicians or assistants in those appointments with them, depending on how the practice wants to run that. But I see a medical director and a technician director, you know, together, co-equal again, and each running their teams and finding ways for them to collaborate on patient care and, you know, where those things cross over. And how best to work together. And the doctors take care of the doctor stuff and the technicians take care of the technician stuff, making sure that places where they overlap, they're doing those things together as a team. That's in like a general practice, right? Then if you take it to the next step, to a tertiary facility where you have an ICU, a critical care unit, emergency, that kind of stuff, these departments can and should be run by the credentialed veterinary technicians working in those departments. So I worked at a facility, we had more than 25 doctors on staff. Like each doctor was not allowed to have their own way of hospitalizing patients, right? The ICU had rules. We had a protocol, we had the way treatments were done. And if a doctor had a need to make an exception to those, that was okay. But also it was really easy for a doctor to say, hey, I'm hospitalizing these patients on fluids. You know, here's the prescription for the fluid orders. Here are the drugs I want them on. Here's when I need, you know, here are the blood tests I want. You guys figure out how you're going to schedule it, how you're going to take care of them in the hospital. Contact me if you have any questions or if anything changes, right? And then you can do that autonomously. And it makes technicians, that is full empowerment of your staff, of your team. And it gives them so much pride, ownership, investment in what they're doing. They're engaged in their work. I was certainly engaged in my work in that practice. It was something I really loved. So that, I think, when we start to move to that model, and we can't move to that model until we have really good staffing levels of credentialed veterinary technicians and skilled, knowledgeable veterinary assistants, you know, doing this work. And I think we can create robust pipelines within our, and I don't really like that term pipeline, but we can create these robust fields where we're growing new people into the career if we can provide them a path that's clear of why they want to proceed in the career, how they might go about it, what they can achieve if they do take that direction in their career, and then also provide them with the support that they need to do that, right? Subsidizing right. tuition, making sure people have time to actually go to school and or do their schoolwork when we're talking about that side of it. And then on the other side, do we want to get a little more broad about like what I want for our profession as a whole, not just for technicians? I'd like to see all of us be treated as adult professionals who are capable of, you know, contributing to a workplace in a fulfilling way for everyone. Yeah. We are not children. We are not less than. We are not this patriarchal, hierarchical bullshit has to die.
Yeah.
And we need to be party. We need to be part of the murder party to kill it because it needs to die. And we need to get to a place where we recognize that we are adults and we are professionals. We are capable of managing our own lives, our own investment in the workplace, like these fucking cell phone policies. Ridiculous. What the hell? I am not a child. I know what's appropriate in the workplace. I want to see full healthcare coverage. I want to see, you know, I don't want to see people having to pay premiums for their healthcare.
Yeah.
If when you work for a multi-billion with a B, multi-billion dollar company, you shouldn't have to pay for your healthcare. You should also not have to pay for your mental health care. There should be actual coverage for that, full coverage and time off allowed to take care of your mental health and your physical health. There should be support for that side of it. And that we're getting into like pipe dream territory, I think, but that is where that's where I want to see it. What I want to see, you know, I live in Silicon Valley. And so all around me, Apple, Twitter, you know, Google, these amazing companies that people want to work for. Why do they want to work for these amazing companies? Number one, they pay really well. Number two, they clearly invest in and take care of their people, right? They have cafeterias with professional chefs that cook for them free meals, basically 24/7. They provide them with all kinds of growth opportunities. They send them to classes. They get them certified. These people don't have restrictions on their time off. They are treated like adults. They are allowed to take time that they need or want in order to, because the company realizes that when you do that, you get an employee back who's more committed, more engaged, more fulfilled.
And that's what all the research says, y'all. That's exactly right. I mean, there's scientific, there's tons of it.
Research. And that's why these companies make multiples and multiples and multiples of millions of dollars because that's what they're doing. I mean, we can look at, and I'm going on a little bit of a rant here, but we can look at Amazon, right? Amazon and their work. Everyone agrees these warehouse workers. Wow. It's a shitty job. It's terrible. They have really undue requirements put on them. And yet, why has only one Amazon warehouse been able to organize? It's because even with all the shit stuff that Amazon piles on them, they also pay for them to go to school. They have amazing benefits. They take care of the other people in their family, right? They are building lives for those people. Now, I'm not defending Amazon. Do not get me wrong and don't quote me because I am a labor organizer. I am not defending Amazon, but I'm saying that these are the things that make it hard for organizers to get a foothold because people are like, where I live in buttfuck Idaho,
right,
or wherever it is, there is no other opportunity, but I can go to work here. I can make more money than I have ever made. I can have benefits and they'll pay for me to go to school so that I can go do something that I really want to do. And if we did that in veterinary medicine, if we treated people like human beings and like adults, professional adults, I think we would see a real change in how people approach work, the level of burnout, the level of compassion fatigue, moral injury. So that's one side, I think, of the coin. and what I would like to see for the veterinary profession.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we are all in 100% agreement with, like you said, down the road, because it's going to happen.
It's
in
a long, long time ago. It's a long time to go.
And I say this all the time on this podcast, because I think it was Yvonne from Internal Medicine podcast that mentioned it to me. And she's like, we're a really young field, because I don't feel young, y'all. But yeah. she it was a really interesting perspective. And I'll always think of it now, like we're a really young field, which there's good and bad with that. But part of it is we have all this room to grow, as Tasha said, but we need to actually do it. We can't just talk about it, or kind of like when you hear someone saying, we can't find vet techs, this is why. And we're all like, this is obvious. Like, can we stop acting like these things are, I wonder why, when it's
not rocket science.
Yeah.
It is not rocket science.
Or just like downplay again, the suicide and mental health issues in our field. I know that it's starting to get addressed, but just like in the rest of society as well, it is severely underplayed. And a lot of the things that are contributing to it can it's complex, but a lot of the things that are contributing to it can be fixed fairly or improved on fairly quickly, because we've identified the triggers from a behavior standpoint. But people say they care about mental health and they put it in their ad, but then they're not actually doing anything.
Right. I mean, the base level, no one can get to self-actualization, to self-improvement, to mental, to true mental health, and if their basic needs aren't met. And when you have people who can't afford, they can't make it to the end of the month and put food on the table, they're the last thing they're thinking about is going to therapy. Like, that just it's not going to work. And that's a spiral. That is an ugly spiral that people can get into, where it's their mental health, their physical health, everything is getting pushed to the back burner, because they're just focused on the barest survival.
Yeah.
And these huge companies in our space right now, you know, I won't name names, I don't want to get your podcast in trouble. This is not my podcast. But there is billions and billions of dollars backing this profession right now. And these companies could fix this problem. And I have said this before, and I will say this again. They could fix it literally with the stroke of a pen overnight. Yeah. They could fix that problem. And they just don't have the will or the desire to do it. And that is painful and frustrating. But it's also why I keep fighting, because I want to point out to people that the power to fix it is there. The ability without, and guess what? Without raising prices on your clients, without raising prices, because some of these companies raise their prices 4 times in a calendar year and give nothing to the team. And I know that owners think that if the company is raising prices, it must be that because they're doing some improvements in something, right? It's because they need to hire more people, or they need to retain people, or everything's getting more expensive and inflation is bad. So clearly they must be taking care of their people, right? Because they've raised prices on me 4 times this past year. And yet that is not the case.
Yeah.
So I want people to recognize that, and I want other people to get as mad about that as I am.
But the more of us advocating, and just like, you know, I think advocating is something that is very important. And first off, when you're exhausted and burnout, it's hard to advocate for yourself. So we should be supporting, just like you would a friend. I want to support and help my colleagues through these difficult things, so when they are in a better place, they can advocate. But helping them with tools and helping them understand they're not alone, and that, because again, like we kind of talked about it earlier, you're not stuck, and it isn't supposed to be this way. And
that's it.
I mean, I think that's the biggest, I think so much of that learned helplessness, we've all experienced it. Why go to another place? They're just going to be the same or worse. And that really affects our mental health severely. And then we become bitter, and that's a whole nother thing. We don't communicate in a good way with clients, and then we start disliking clients, and it's just and disliking what we love, and that affects our mental health. It's just a vicious circle. So I know we kind of talked a lot about where we'd like to see the field, and that kind of acknowledged some of those obstacles that technicians are dealing with every day. And we're not even, those are kind of the bigger ones. There's so many, again, we love our jobs, but real talk, guys. So on to the next kind of segue, how, because we kind of talked about some ways that we can encourage vets to utilize technicians, basically by addressing us, the having similar titles throughout all, so veterinarians are clear to what we can do and feeling more comfortable with it. But what other suggestions would you guys have to help encourage vets to utilize technicians? And how can we foster a relationship of collaboration? Because that's what the thing is. I tell care, and I include behavior consultants into this, because I tell people all the time, I think behavior consultants, your veterinary team, and you as a client, and then your cat or dog, we need each other. We all need each other. I'm great, but I need their support. For example, if an animal's medical issue isn't being paid, I never see this ever. If a dog's or cat's pain is not being appropriately addressed, I'm not prescribing or diagnosing. I'm staying in my lane. I'm sharing observations and data with the client and the veterinarian, and that's causing aggressive behavior. And if that isn't managed, it's a hard situation for me to be in. So I think, what are some ways we could foster a relationship of collaboration? Because we all three understand, again, it's not about us versus them. We're all together. But unfortunately, I think the industry is kind of created a different type of culture where it is us against them, even though that's not what all three of us are working towards. Tasha?
Yeah, I agree. I think it does kind of go back to what Liz was saying about having not only a unified title, but a real good description of our duties, right? What can a certified veterinary technician do and bring to this table? Because I can see both sides of this, right? It's hard because in veterinary school, the veterinary students really rely on the techs a lot. But at the same time, they rely on the techs. They're also being told in class, hey, you need to learn how to place that catheter. You need to learn how to intubate. You need to learn how to do this, because you might go into a place that doesn't have any techs, which, come on, guys, when is this going to happen? This is probably not going to happen.
Also, why would any vet student take a job at a place that didn't have any credential techs?
Right.
If you're coming out of school, if you're a vet student listening to this, right, and you're listening to this and you're like going on interviews at job sites, like, ask them about their team.
Yeah.
And don't take a job at a place that doesn't have credentialed technicians on staff. Just don't do it. Why would you?
Exactly. And I think that like, if we had more awareness, where more vets coming out of school had the expectation that they're going to work with credentialed technicians, and here are the job duties that the credentialed technicians will take care of, and here are the job duties I will take care of, that I think will lend itself into having better patient care, better collaboration between the two of us, so we can work truly as a team. But it's true, because right now there is this kind of shade of gray. When a veterinarian gets on, they go into a practice, right? They're introduced to people who are being labeled as technicians, as nurses, as whatever. And the skill level is all over the place.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that we really do need to get our shit together when it comes to having a unified title, a standard of, a testing standard, and what did you guys call it?
A scope of practice.
Yes.
Exactly. Scope of practice. Yes. So we all know what's happening.
I agree. I think we need veterinarian allies. We need DVMs who recognize the importance of credentialed technicians, and we need them speaking up on our behalf in those rooms where we don't have a seat at the table, where we're not allowed to be. So we need veterinarians to do that and to really introduce technicians into those discussions, or elevate technicians to give them a seat at those tables where we're barred from participation. So I think that that's a key thing. I think that the younger generation now of veterinarians who are graduating are coming out with more, with a little bit more visibility into
definitely
what credential technicians are, and the value of them. And I think there are, I really do believe that veterinarians are coming out. I mean, they are able to write their own ticket at this point in time. There's such a shortage. People, I just saw Banfield is offering $200,000 signing bonuses to come at work at Banfield. Oh. So if they're going to invest that in you, you can basically make any demands you want on a veterinary clinic. So if you go to a place and they're like, we really want you to work here, you vet students, you have the power to go out and say, okay, I will only come work here if you meet these staffing ratios. I insist on having a minimum of 6 full-time equivalent support team members
right
for me every day that I work. So that can be any combination of management, assistant, credential technicians, but you better have at least one credential technician on every day that I work, because that's my requirement to come work here. So that alone, if veterinarians really pushed for that, if they advocated on our behalf in that way, that would make a huge change. But we can't get to that point until they really understand the value of the credential technician and stop feeling or thinking that we're trying to encroach on them or their jobs or their responsibilities. I think that when I think about the dinosaurs in this profession, who unfortunately are the ones who tend to be in leadership of the profession for one reason or another. So when I think of these dinosaurs, these are people who are scared. They are scared that technicians are coming for their jobs in a similar way that some MDs are scared that NPs and PAs are coming for their jobs, right? Or not even, let's not even take that, because I don't think that's necessarily true, but let's just take it down to anesthesiologists who don't like CRNAs. You know, and I get it. I get that there's a fear that they're encroaching on your sphere of influence, your job, that it's cheaper to hire a CRNA than it is to hire an anesthesiologist for a hospital group, right? But if we have clear delineation of job tasks, which in veterinary medicine we do, it's one thing we have done right. We have, every state keeps those 4 things separate for veterinarians that technicians cannot do. And most technicians I know don't want to do.
Right.
So if we, whereas a lot of vets I know want to do my job. So like, okay,
oh my gosh,
why did you go to vet school?
Like, why did they want it? I was at an emergency clinic, and let me tell you, I was at an emergency clinic, and there was a criticalist, and it was a post-thoracotomy, and I was like, do you want to get a blood gas? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, all right. And then they said, I'll get it, and I'll run it. And I was like, no, I can pull the blood. Like, I had an arterial line in. I was like, I can pull the blood. I put the
I'm pretty sure in. You have other more important things can do to that. Do. One of the 4 I things.
Like, I feel like this is not a great use of, like, you know, the clinic's hospital dollars and your time being aborted criticalist sitting over here waiting for the arterial blood gas results.
And that's like, it.
I'm not saying I need to interpret them and make a diagnosis based on them. I can run the fucking IDEX test.
That's right. And if you use, and Tasha, your point is exactly right. Like, they're paying you. I mean, even you as a VTS, you're getting a much higher pay rate even than a credential technician, or you should be, credential technician or assistant who's working there, right? But all of you should be getting paid less than the veterinarian. So if we really want to increase productivity and increase profitability of practices, the only way to get there, literally the only way to get there, is full utilization of your credentialed technician staff. Get the doctors off of the floor. Stop. They should not be doing patient care. Get them on the phone with clients. Get them in surgery suite. Get them on the computer writing their fucking records, and keep them off of the floor. They don't need to be doing patient care. They shouldn't be doing patient care. It is inefficient, and it's going to lead you to not making money at your practice. And we all want the practices to make money, because if the practices don't make money, we don't get paid either. So right. It's in everybody's benefit to make this happen. And the more you use us, the less pressure there is on the veterinarian. They can get their records done in time. They're not at home doing their records in the middle of the night because they couldn't get it done while they were at work. They can be talking to only the clients they need to talk to. You don't need the veterinarian to talk to every single client about every single thing. You can right. use your credentialed technician to have those conversations. You can have really well-trained front desk staff who can do so much more than we are using them for.
100%.
With a yes. little bit more training in some cases, it's all they need. They can be selling those preventatives. They can be selling your over-the-counter stuff. They can be really such a profit center for your practice. And we're just stuck in this old way of thinking, in this is how we've always done it. And then this also, like, let's perpetuate generational trauma. You know, I went through it, so you have to go yeah. through it. Bullshit that we need to get rid of. And if people would let go and truly ask us, talk to us about our capabilities, about what it is we want to do, how we can contribute to the practice, we could make every single practice in this country profitable, super profitable, without raising prices on clients.
And by providing better care.
And yeah. Now I hear these yeah. veterinarians, now the big buzzword in the DVM circles is spectrum of care. We can't always offer the gold standard. So how do we offer a spectrum of care? And none of them, when I listen to these conversations, talk about credentialed veterinary technician appointments, letting them see their own patients, letting them run their own schedules and make money for the practice. I don't yeah. hear them talking about that. It's like we don't even exist, which is insane, because this is an easy way for them to make a shit ton of money.
And we could see more patients yeah. and clients, so we yeah. can help make veterinary care more accessible.
That's right.
We're going to take pressure off the veterinarian, because I'm sure we've all felt this way as technicians, where like you feel like you have to do everything, and that's not a healthy mentality.
Okay.
And I know that gets conditioned in vet school, to be fair, it starts there, but they feel like they have to do everything. And then of course they're so burnt out and
right.
can't ask for help. I mean, it's just
right.
again, this utilizing credentialed technicians is going to help everything. Right. So I got Liz a bit on a bit.
Yeah, you did.
Bit sorry. On a thing. A no, I
soapbox.
I love Liz's soapbox and Tasha's soapboxes.
Yeah. Tasha got it in Philadelphia at the AVMA convention. I was literally pounding a table. I mean, literally pounding on the table.
It was great. It was wonderful.
I'm glad and I'm sad I wasn't there. but to end the podcast, since it is Veterinary Technician Week, and again, we celebrate veterinary technicians and all other veterinary support staff, and we love our veterinarians. I work with some amazing veterinarians who, especially when it comes to behavior, have really utilized me. And it's a beautiful team effort. So thankfully I have some of those relationships. So big shout out to all those amazing veterinarians out there, but also we're talking from an industry standpoint. And unfortunately, guys, this is how it is. Everything we're saying is very real, and it's a bummer. But we appreciate our veterinary allies, and please keep doing you.
Yes.
But to end the podcast, what are some ways in your personal experience as veterinary technicians that you feel like our industry can celebrate, and our clinics or wherever? Because again, I'm a consultant, we're all educators. How we can celebrate and recognize veterinary technicians this week and every day.
Utilize yeah, them fully. I mean, ask them what exactly. they want to do, and then yes, find
I
ways
did. I was just gonna say that,
to let them do it.
Talk to them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ask them what they want to do. Ask them what they're interested in, and then find ways together to let them do the things that they're interested in doing that are going to help the practice. And I think like that is a beautiful way to celebrate Vet Tech Week. If you could say to everyone, have those one-on-one meetings and say, you know, what's your passion? What do you really want to be doing?
I would have like started bawling in
right?
a beautiful, I would.
Yeah.
I mean, I talk about it a lot because I am so supported now, and I have such amazing colleagues and mentors, but it was not,
no,
it was not like that for a really, really long time. And I was not supported or empowered at all. And obviously money is important, all these things we've talked about, but truly, I don't think I've ever, I mean, now that you mention it, I worked at practice for a very long time. And I don't think I was ever asked, what do I want ever, which is kind of, that's bizarre crazy. To think about now.
It's crazy, right? I think that's the key. And for me, honestly, the best things, the absolute best things that I got were not things that cost money. They were personal letters or shows of other ways that they showed appreciation and thanks. Like really heartfelt, specific, personalized things.
How about you, Tasha? Same thing?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I have gotten some pretty rad socks, so.
but those, I've gotten I've gotten gifts, but they were more personalized, right? So it might have been like back when the Bye Felicia thing was people still say it, you guys, haha.
They do.
At our clinic, it was something that we said in like a loving way a lot. And the veterinarian got each of the technicians like something with it. So again, it was something about our relationship. Yeah. It was personal. And I think that the empowerment thing, I mean, I can't talk about it more because not again, from a selfish standpoint, not that that's where we're coming from, but I'm selling it on all the standpoints. You're going to empower that technician. They're going to get better. They're going to stay there once they learn that. And
they
then
recognize
be able,
you're invested in them. They're going to invest
exactly.
in you.
And that's a huge thing. So not, it doesn't only benefit the techs, even though that's really what we're talking about right now with Vet Tech Week, but there's so many benefits to you. And just knowing that, you know, I'm not just a number or you feel like I can easily be replaced, which that's a whole nother thing. Cause that is not the case. But in many cases I have felt, and maybe the clinic didn't feel that way, but that's how I felt.
Well, I had a boss actually say that to me.
Oh, that's depressing.
Yeah. You know, everyone's replaceable. You've gotten a little too big for your britches.
That's such a red flag
for me. You
just need
to remember that everybody's replaceable.
Ooh. Oh. Thankfully, I have a partner, so I have two incomes. Yeah. I would have probably walked out.
Oh, I was very close. Very close.
I was made for big britches, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I love it. That needs to be a shirt. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was made for big britches, baby. Yeah. That's
my booty's too big for small britches.
Well, thank you guys so much for hanging out with me this evening and for everything you guys do for the field. I love you guys. You guys are amazing. And
I love you both. Two of my favorite women in vet med. It was a pleasure to have this time with you.
And we
thank you, Tabitha.
See, you guys, women love each other.
I mean, sort of.
I'm pretty. I don't know. Maybe
no, I love
mine, but I feel great. I love
and adore both of you, and I admire both of you. You're doing amazing things. You inspire, but seriously, you both inspire me every day. Thank you.
Yeah, you guys are badasses. Everybody out there listening is badasses.
You guys are badass. The fact that you're listening to a vet tech podcast shows me you're like, hey, you know, I'm a vet tech. I want to listen to vet tech stuff.
For real.
You're badass. You're amazing. You're a friendly reminder that you're not just a vet tech. You're fucking amazing. And please replay that on repeat on the bad days you're having. But
yeah,
thank you guys so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Tabitha.
Thank you to everyone for listening. And again, another huge shout out to all the amazing veterinary technicians out there. What are you doing this week to celebrate you? What is your job doing to celebrate and recognize you? Please share with us at Tales from a Vet Tech. I would love to hear about it.